Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Davis, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, in the Elgin, Texas. Today is August the 29th, 2024, or as Elu 25, 2028. We will start our first service today with our sermon entitled The Kingdom of Heaven Likened Unto 10 Virgins, taken from Living Symbolic Code number 12 by Vicki Holler. Whatever, I don't know what date it was. Go into Chrysos. All right, that's the end of the Chrysos. That's a long Chrysos, a whole page full. For the brother of so-and-so, who is visiting us, has asked me to give a study on the kingdom, and with the Yahweh's help, I shall endeavor to do my best for the bringing out a certain fact on that subject. Let us turn to Matthew 14:42-43. Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your master does come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known and what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. These verses convey the idea that no one knows the day and the hour of Yahshua's coming. And therefore the Yahshua admonishes his people to be ready all the time. Then he draws that illustration that if a certain one knew that a thief would attempt for the breaking into his house at a certain time, he would certainly watch for him. But the fact is that no one knows exactly when a thief will enter. Matthew 24:44-45. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? So the question is asked here. If no one knows the day and the hour, and they don't, well, what he's talking about, no one of the common people that are not called and preordained to be ministers and to have inspiration and to interpret prophecy. He's talking about the ordinary person. And we can prove that from the book of Psalms. Now, it says in Psalms chapter 14, start with verse 1, for the fool hath said in his heart, there is no Yahweh. They are corrupt, for they have done the abominable works. There is none that doeth good. Okay. For the Yahweh looked down from the heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek the Father Yahweh. They are all gone aside. They are all together become filthy. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. have all the workers of the iniquity no knowledge, who eat up my people as they eat bread and call not upon the Yahshua? That's talking about call upon the Son of Yahweh. There were they in great fear for the Yahweh, the Father, is in the generation of the righteous. You have shamed the counsel of the poor, because the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, is his refuge. Oh, that the salvation of the Israel will come out of Zion, when the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, bringeth back the captivity of his people, for the Jacob shall rejoice, and Israel shall be glad. Okay. Now the key is, it says the fool has said in his heart, there is no Yahweh. Okay. And all the way over there in Psalm 53, it talks about, let's read it. For the fool has said in his heart, there is no Yahweh. There is no, in other words, there is no God. Corrupt are they, and have done abominable iniquity. There is none that doeth good. For the Yahweh looked down from the heaven upon the children of men, to see if there were any that did understand, that did seek Yahweh. Now he's talking about, he looked down upon the children of men, the ones that were not righteous. He looked down upon the fool. That's who he looked down upon. And there's none righteous among the fools. Every one of them is gone back. They are altogether become filthy. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. It's talking about the wicked here that have purposed themselves to be totally wicked. He's talking about them. There's none of them righteous. Have the workers of the iniquity no knowledge, who eat up my people, as they eat bread? They have not called upon the Yahweh. There were they in great fear, where no fear was, for the Yahweh has scattered the bones of him that encampeth against thee. Thou hast put them to shame, because Yahweh hath despised them. Oh, that the salvation of the Israel would come out of this, it says Zion here, when the Yahweh bringeth back the captivity of his people, for Jacob shall rejoice and Israel shall be glad. Okay. So basically what Yahweh said, that there is none righteous, no, not one, among the fools or the common children of men that have gone backwards from serving him. All right, let's go now back into our study. Symbolic code number 11, volume 11, number 12. It says that this implies that there are certain conditions which must be met by those who would be called faithful and wise servants. They must be given a meat in due season. Okay. The only ones that can give meat in due season are people that have been preordained and to have the inspiration of the Spirit. Job 32:8 says, but there the Spirit man and the inspiration of the Almighty giveth them understanding, or giveth him understanding. There's a Spirit man. And So Matthew 24:46, it says, blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Now he's called servant, and another place in Matthew he called three servants, and gave him talents, five, two, and one. And two of them were faithful, but one of them wasn't faithful. So this is what it's talking about. He calls servants, but not all are faithful. We, as a denomination, as a Seventh-day Adventist denomination, should be able to reason out the lesson that is in these verses, according unto the verse 45, where the Yeshua has made someone ruler over his household. And as you search the scriptures, you'll find out that in Malachi 4:5, he has made this antithetical Elijah, whoever he is when he comes in his last day. He's that someone, Malachi 4:5, that is ruler over his household. Who would that be in the Yahweh's church and the Seventh-day Adventist denomination? Now this is Richie Harder preaching to the Seventh-day Adventist denomination back in 1946. Richie Harder also is Seventh-day Adventist. And he is a servant called, given inspiration to interpret prophecy for the Seventh-day Adventist church. That's what he's doing now. If we are to attach this to someone, it would necessarily be attached to the president of the general conference, who heads all the work of the Seventh-day Adventist. And of course, since his responsibility is spread throughout the churches and shared by the ministry whom he directs, it follows that they all are included in what Yahshua is saying here. That is the only thing that it should mean, Matthew 24:45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master has made ruler over his household to give them meat and be seasoned? So really, the question is asked, which one of the two twins, Esau or Jacob, ended up being the wise servant in this case? And whoever the antithetical Jacob is, that's the wise servant that the Yahshua has come back in his last days to make ruler over his household. So there is a prophet somewhere today that's in the world, that's the antithetical Jacob. And he has this interpretation of the latter-day prophecies for the saints, that becomes righteous for them to understand. Anyone outside of that cannot understand. I'm talking about the professed wicked that has chosen to be 100% wicked and cannot understand the truth no matter what, like the Pharisees did of old. Should not meat in due season be a message from the Yahweh, especially addressed unto his people and applicable at that time? Another name for the meat and due season is present truth. So then, the servant is to give his household present truth. Okay? So, when you find someone that's able to interpret the prophecy and give it a present-day application, then you have found that servant that can give meat in due season. Matthew 24:46. Blessed it is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. If our application is now right, that this is speaking unto the Seventh-day Adventist church just prior unto the Yahshua's coming, then we must understand that the Yahshua, the Son, wants his servant to give unto his household meat in due season until he comes. Matthew 24:47. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. So it says now there in Revelation 2:26, he that I overcometh will I give to be the ruler over the nations. But he's talking about there, the overcomer between these two servants of the Esau's and the Jacob, whichever of them have overcome 100%. And when you go read the story about Jacob's final overcoming, you'll see where he wrestled with the angel all night, and that the angel blessed him and told him he had prevailed. Says, you have fully overcome. He says, your name now is Israel. It's no longer Jacob. Proving that Jacob has got Yahshua's blessing. And he's a chosen servant for all time. Matthew 24:47. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him a ruler over all his goods. This verse implies that the Yahshua has not as yet made his servant ruler over all his goods. But when he proves true by the attending unto his business of faithfully giving unto his household meat in the due season until the Yahshua comes, then the Yahshua is going to make him ruler over all his goods. That is the promise. Matthew 24:48-50. But and if that evil servant should say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servant, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Yahshua of that servant shall come in a day when he speaketh, when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of. If no one is to know the day and the hour until the Yahshua come, then how could this servant be aware of the day and the hour? Do you see that one statement seems to contradict the other? No one knows the hour, the day. Therefore, Yahshua's people must be ready for the event to occur at almost any time. And if this servant does not think and not faithfully perform his duties, then when the Yahshua is about to come, that servant will not be aware of it. Is that not how you understand these two statements? Up until a certain time, Yahshua's people, it's talking about the Son of Yahweh, he has redeemed people by his blood. This is who he's talking about. Do not know. So it says, up until a certain time, Yahshua's people do not know the day and the hour. But if they continue for the receiving of the meat and the due season, a day will come when this servant is going to be made aware of that hour of that day. Okay. For the illustration was not given unto us alone, but unto all of Yahweh's people, ever since it was written, and they were warned to be ready all the time, because no one knew the day and the hour of his coming. But as the truth progresses, and the word of Yahweh unrolls, Yahweh's servants in the end are to be aware of the day and the hour. Does it not say that? That is just what it does say. But what is the danger here? What caused the servant to begin to eat and drink with the drunkard? They said that Yahshua delayed his coming. There were only two occasions in all of the church's history of Israel that man complained that the Yahshua delayed his coming. They were the first, or early apostolics, who had expected Yahshua to come immediately. They thought surely it would not be very long before the Yahshua would come in a like manner as he had gone up. But lo, almost 2,000 years have passed since the promise was given, and the Yahshua has not come yet. So there was a chance for the earlier apostolic believers, that was the followers of the 12 apostles, to complain that the Yahshua had delayed his coming. But we are not dealing with the disappointment at the commencement of the apostolic church. Rather, we are speaking of, let's do that again, let's do the whole thing over again. It says, but we are not dealing with the disappointment at the commencement of the apostolic church 2,000 years ago. Rather, we are speaking of the time when the Yahshua is really to come, in the time of the end. And we are now in the time of the end. We're in the 12th periodic hour since 2002. And that's the last hour of probationary history. You know that there was a people on this end of the church's history who also expected Yahshua to come long before now. I suppose you would say they were the Millerites, but under this I cannot agree, because there was no delay for them. And they had set the date for the Yahshua's coming in 1844, and the outcome for them was not a delay, but a bit of disappointment. For the Seventh-day Adventists thought since 1844 believed that in their lifetime and their generation, Yahshua would come and take them to heaven. You that have been Seventh-day Adventists for a long time, or even for a short time, know that it was their expectation. Instead, however, many of them are in their graves today. In the early days, Our churches used to have, let's do it again, for in the early days, our Seventh-day Adventist churches used to have a sign hanging and a side reading thus, "For the gospel preached unto all the world and this generation." I add the word "for." It actually read, "The gospel preached unto all the world and this generation." Those signs have long since been taken down. 100 years ago, everybody who knew Adventists knew what were our expectations, but it is not the case today. I can also recall that after I became a Seventh-day Adventist, I heard the brethren say that the Yahshua will come almost momentarily, but the Yahshua has not come yet. For they erroneously concluded that the Yahshua would come in a few years, but it was to their detriment, for when the time passed, they became careless. We see then that according unto our early expectations as the Advent, Yahshua apparently has delayed his coming, and inasmuch as no other people in all the Christian world ever expected Yahshua to come as the Adventists did, then this lesson is applicable only unto us. Moreover, when at first Yahweh's people expected Yahshua to come soon, they all seemed to conform to the diet regulation which were given to the church to keep them apart from the world. But when the Yahshua's people thought that the Yahshua had delayed his coming, what did they do? The majority laid aside their Adventist habits of eating and living. They seemed not to have understood that their prescribed mode of the living as Yahweh had enjoined upon them was not limited to any certain time, but it was to be binding upon them until the Yahshua comes. What will the Yahshua do about those who became careless because they thought the Yahshua delayed his coming? Let us read Matthew 24:48-51. "But and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, My master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servant, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the master of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of the teeth." What a terrible disappointment it will be unto the people that for a time waited for the Yahshua's coming, once lined up with the program, and then departed from it. Unto these the Yahshua come when they are not expecting him. Matthew 25:1. "Then shall the kingdom of the heaven be likened unto 10 virgins which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom." This verse begins with the word "then," indicating that it takes place at the time that the Yeshua comes, as spoken of in the preceding verse. In other words, at the time the Yeshua comes, for the kingdom shall be likened unto something, for the kingdom of the Yeshua as a crowned kingdom does not exist today, as you know. Then what is meant here by the kingdom? It is referring unto the people that are the candidates for the citizenship in the kingdom of heaven. Who are the subjects for the everlasting kingdom of the Yeshua? If they are not in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, it's asking a question here. Who are the subjects for the kingdom of the Yeshua if they are not in his church today, which Peter Holler referred to the Seventh-day Adventist as being his church of 1946, which we believe he was? Then the people comprising the church of the Yeshua shall be likened unto 10 virgins. Matthew 25:2-5. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. For they that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps, while the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. When this happens, the church is likened unto 10 virgins, and the ones that were foolish had their lamps all right, but they did not take with them more oil than what was in the lamps, for they therefore had the extra had no extra reserve of oil. Let's do that again. For they therefore had no extra reserve of the oil. What does oil stand for? When used in a lamp, it gives light, which illuminates your way, does it not? In the spiritual realm, it is the understanding of the prophecies of the Bible that alone causes you to know where you are going. You get that? In the spiritual realm, it is the understanding of the prophecies of the Bible that alone causes you to know where you are going. And you need a prophet in your midst, for the Bible says where there's no vision, the people perish. You have to have a prophet in your midst with inspiration. As Job 32:8 says, but there's a spirit man, the inspiration of the Almighty giveth them understanding. Only 5 of the virgins have extra oil, for they had availed themselves of the extra oil at the time when that extra oil was made available also, so that they could refill their lamps in the case that the oil that was in them should be used before they reached their destination. So these 10 virgins appeared in the third treating pastor, Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, in 2002 at the Passover. This is when they appeared to get their reward. And we know what happened there. Gilead Center is no longer, because the prophet of the candlestick of Laodicea, the Adventist Church, Brother Stephen Johnson, did not understand and have inspiration on the prophecy. In other words, he didn't have this extra oil or sometime that he needed so that we could go on. But my wife and I, Catherine, we had obtained that extra oil, and we obtained it over the past 32 years that we had been with Brother Frederick Johnson from 1970 to 2002. My wife had obtained this extra oil. So when the prophet failed in 2002 to let the people know where they were in the same time, my wife and I understood where we were. And so therefore that's the reason why we moved on, and Brother Johnson and the rest of the congregation was left behind. That's why we're here today teaching this extra oil to anybody that wants to hear it. For the light that comes in, for the light that came in 1844 to lighten the path forward, was the truth of the judgment of the dead, which began then. Okay? So it says, those that received this light call themselves Seventh-day Adventists from that time on. In the words used in this parable, they filled their lamps with the oil, which represented the judgment of the dead message. Then came the terrifying time, or the tarrying time. Let's read that again. Then came the tarrying time. It is true that the Millerites, expecting the Yahshua to come to the earth, for they were called in 1833, and they were preaching, and William Miller was preaching that the Yahshua was going to come in 1844 at the Atonement. So he preached that for 10 years, from 1833 to 1844. But it didn't happen. It is true that the Millerites expected the Yahshua to come to the earth for the saints on a certain date in 1844. And he did not appear. They concluded, therefore, that they must have made a mistake, and they were no longer known by a name. It was the Seventh-day Adventist that expected the Yahshua to come, not on a certain day, but in a generation at a certain period of time. Since he did not come, however, they therefore concluded that the Yahshua delayed his coming. That's 25:5-6. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him." For the cry to meet the bridegroom comes after the time of the tarrying. Matthew 25:7-12. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto their wives, "Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out." But the wise answered, saying, "Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather to them that sell, and buy for yourselves." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterwards came also the other virgins, saying, "Master, Master, open unto us." But he answered and said, "Verily, I say unto you, I know you not." And an announcement is made that the bridegroom cometh. All the virgins are awakened by it. If the announcement were to come on the general conference, you know, that all the members would fill their vessels with the oil, and all would have it. For the facts are, though, that the cry does not come from there. All trim their lamps, we are told. What is the application in that? We may conclude that while the cry goes out, the people trim their lamps with the oil that is in them. In other words, they begin to apply their message to the change in the circumstances or events. So what happened? The lamps go out. That indicates that what we had expected to happen does not happen. Instead, something else takes place. For the Seventh-day Adventists are expecting the war of the Armageddon to take place next. When they see something different come instead, they will become confused. They will then realize that the oil in their lamp, the judgment of the dead message, is not sufficient to guide them through this situation. Then they will long for the extra oil, additional light, a message of the judgment for the living, which had previously been available unto them, but they had failed to obtain it. Thus feeling their urgent need of it, they will demand it from those who have it, but it will be too late. By the time they arrive at the bridegroom's chamber, they find that he has already entered and closed the door. They knock, they plead, thinking he will surely open the door and welcome them inside. But instead, what do they hear them say? Verily I say unto you, I know you not, and the door remains shut. Probation has closed for them. Let us now identify the different personalities brought in here is the bridegroom. So where is the bride? And who are the virgins? The cry was, behold, the bridegroom cometh. This cry was not the bride, but to the virgin. The virgins can only represent the guest. Who is the bride? Let us turn to the Revelation 21 for help in the identifying who is the bride. Revelation 21:9-10, and there came unto me one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, come hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit unto a great and high mountain, and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from Yahweh. So now here's where V.T. Hara, prophet to the Adventist Church in 1946, this is where he went off. He went off track, and this is a false interpretation of the Lamb's Bride. He went off track when he said earlier, when we read the paragraph earlier, let us now identify the different personalities brought in. Here is a bridegroom. But where is the bride? And who are the virgins? The cry was, Behold, the bridegroom cometh. First, the bridegroom cometh to the 10 virgins, and he finds half of them, 5 of them are wise, and he chooses them to go in to the wedding supper. Well, he chooses those 5 wise virgins as his bride. And so Vitihalif misinterpreted this to the Adventist people. So it's the 5 wise virgins that becomes the bride to the bridegroom. And so, that's all the, I'm going to go ahead and read to you what Vitihalif said. He goes on and says, The Lamb's wife is a city. No, the Lamb's wife is in the holy city. The city itself is a brick building. It's made up of golden brick. But the people that live in it is the Lamb's wife. Okay, John saw the foundation and the walls and the buildings of the holy city. He did not see the people, no. He didn't see the bride that was inside. But he's saying that the holy city is the bride. Well, he was supposed to say, for the people in the holy city, the 5 wise virgins are in the holy city. That's where his bride is at. He called the city the Lamb's wife. If the city is the Lamb's wife, and if the virgins are the ones who are to meet the bridegroom, then who is the bride? The Chena must be the bride. So the everlasting purified Chena of the heaven here on earth, which we represent today, of Daniel 2, 44 and 45, in the days of these kings, the Yahshua of the heaven shall set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. He's going to come down to this earth and set up this kingdom of heaven. He's going to get his 5 wise virgins that represents his bride of this kingdom. And Vitihalif has that part right. For the people of the Yahshua's church are the guests and are represented by the virgin. Well, that's hard to understand. For the same thing is true in the parable as we find in the parable of the king going and to examine the guest for the marriage one of whom he found without a wedding garment on. Those whom he examined are the guests. To summarize then, the people are the guests, the kingdom is the bride, and the Yahshua is the groom. So what do you say? To summarize, the people are the guests. The kingdom is the bride. Okay. And the Yahshua is the groom. Well, we represent the everlasting kingdom of heaven today in the 12th hour. Yahshua is the head of it. It says so in the parable of Luke 1, 32. And 3, and it says so in the prophecy of Isaiah 9, 6 to 8. He sits upon the throne of David when he comes back to the earth to make judgment between the sheep and the goats. For the kingdom is the bride, and Yahshua is the groom. Moreover, in the parable we are studying today, did Yahshua come to the earth when the 10 virgins, where the 10 virgins were? Yes, he did. For he came where both the unworthy and the worthy virgins were. If he came to the earth and had a door of his own to shut or to open, that would indicate that he had a place of his own. Then he will come to his kingdom, and unless the guests enter on time through the door, they will be disappointed when they knock and the door will not be opened unto them. Well, you can read about the story in John chapter 10, I believe. Since this coming of the bridegroom is obviously not the visible second coming of the Yeshua. Okay. Well, see, this is another thing I disagree with Bishop Hardin. Since the coming of the bridegroom is obviously the visible second coming of the Yeshua, I took out that word not, because it is the visible second coming of the Yeshua, for the taking to heaven his people, who shall meet him in the air. We should be able to find in the Bible something more about it. So actually, when Yahshua comes in 1 Thessalonians 4:16, it says, "For the Yahshua himself shall descend from heaven with a shout with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet of Yahweh." Well, that's I will say this. That will be the third coming of Yahshua. We've always heard about the first and second coming of Yahshua, but never about the third coming. Prophecy is very deep on all of this, that he comes in the second coming visibly to take charge of his army and his kingdom. And that's in Revelation 19:10, that's in Joel 2:2, and that's in Jeremiah 51:19-20, and that's in Isaiah 66, that's in Isaiah 2, that's in Micah 4. And Yahshua comes back and takes charge of his kingdom at his second coming. And then there's a time when he appears in the clouds at the end of the resurrection, and that he takes everybody up in the clouds, those that he had resurrected since Adam and Eve, and those whom he has redeemed by his blood during the 12th day by his hour, and has destroyed all their wicked. And then he pulls them up in the cloud, fulfilling 1 Thessalonians 4:16-17. Okay. It says Matthew 25:31-32. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. Yet these verses say that the Son of Man is going to come down on a cloud, where the just risen dead along with the living saints will meet him in the air, as in 1 Thessalonians 4:16-17. Is that what we just read? No, it says that here that at this coming he will gather all nations before him, and then he will sit down on his throne and separate them. This is his second coming. Matthew 25:31-32. He will put the ghosts on the left those that are to be lost, the wicked, and the sheep, the righteous, those on his right, to be saved. Moreover, he will tell each of the two classes what they have or have not done that caused them to be thus judged and separated. Do you not see clearly why we need the extra oil, the message of the judgment for the living? For we, as the Adventists, have been preaching the judgment for 100 years or more, and yet never even for a moment did we see that these parables were talking about the judgment for the living. If we never saw it before, we should now be able to see certainly, or clearly, that the judgment included the separation of the righteous and the wicked. You cannot say that the judgment we are reading about in Matthew 25 is a judgment which is to take place during the millennium, because his people are not then among the nations. There is positively no escaping the conclusion that it takes place in the time of the judgment for the living. Here in the 12th parabolic hour, I added that when both the righteous and the wicked are commingled on the earth. And that's been since 2002, when the judgment of the living began here in the 12th parabolic hour. Since, moreover, this work of the separation goes on among the people themselves, it is clear that it is not a work to be done in heaven, but it is a work to be done on the earth. Then shall two be in the field, and one shall be taken and the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, and one shall be taken and the other left. Matthew 24:40-41. Some call that the rapture, but it's quite different than what they think it is. Now we plainly see that Yeshua in the Matthew 25 is talking about the judgment for the living, and in the connection with this subject, we find that the Malachi says the very same thing, namely, that after a messenger has prepared the way, Yeshua will suddenly come to his temple to purify it, Matthew 3:1. When he comes, it is not to judge the dead in the heavenly sanctuary, but to judge the living in the earthly sanctuary. And if Yeshua is going to sit on his throne on the earth and gather the nations before him and judge and separate the people, where specifically is Yeshua going to sit? In Daniel 2, we find that the description and interpretation of the great image which the king of Babylon saw in a dream, we as the Adventists, and for that matter, not only we Adventists, but other Bible students as well, recognize that this image represents the nations of the world from the Babylon's time down unto today. We also understand that the toe or kingdoms represent the nations in existence today. Now let us read Daniel 2:44-45. And in the days of these kings, the toe kings, shall the Yahweh of the heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without the hand, and that it brake in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great Yahweh hath made known unto the king what shall come to pass hereafter. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. For the Daniel here describes how the earth's government come to their end, not how the earth comes to its end. He interpreted the stone to be their kingdom. And it is the Yahweh's kingdom that will smite the nation. Not of Yahshua's coming from heaven to take up the saint, as we Adventists have taught. Jeremiah calls the kingdom Yahweh's battle axe. Jeremiah 51:20. What plainer language could be used to say that the kingdom is going to be set up before the nations come to their end? The trouble some have believing this is not because of the language the Bible used, but the trouble is with our preconceived ideas that were built up throughout the years. And the only way we can drive out our former erroneous ideas is to believe just what the Bible says. Now, let us turn to Ezekiel 36:17-19. Son of man, when the house of Israel dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their own way and by their doing. Their way was before me as the uncleanness of a removed woman. Wherefore I poured my fury upon them for the blood that they had shed upon the land, and for the idols wherewith they had polluted it, and I scattered them among the heathen, and they were dispersed through the countries according unto their way and according unto their doings I judged them. This says that because of the evils of the people, Yahweh dispersed them throughout the country. Ezekiel 36:20. And when they entered into the heathen, whither they went, they proclaimed my holy name. For they said unto them, these are the people of Yahweh, and are gone forth out of his land. They profane his name. When it was said of them that they are the people of the Yahweh gone out of his land, is it not profaning Yahweh's name for the Gentiles to have driven Yahweh's people out of their own land and become rulers over them after Yahweh had so miraculously brought them there and set them up to be the greatest kingdom, even his kingdom on the earth? Could not the Gentiles feel that they had successfully defeated Yahweh's purpose for them? For Yahweh's people have brought this great curse upon themselves through their disobedience, thus profaning Yahweh's holy name in the midst of the heathen, whither they went. It has been brought up to me many times that the Gentiles took Yahweh's people captive because Yahweh was not able to defend his own kingdom, and therefore he was unable to fulfill his promise to Israel. Thus was the name profaned among the heathen, all because of the disobedience of Yahweh's own people. Okay, this brings the end of our study, this our contact just at the 11th hour call. We'll continue this now with number 2.